sponsor to buy Overcast, an independent podcast app that embraces the open world of podcasting instead of locking it down.
No exclusives, no premium content, no paywalls. Just a great podcast app for everyone.
Get it for free in the App Store. Hello, my sweet friend. Yeah, I'm talking to you. Yeah, you.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, Nedward. You think I'm sweet?
I do. Also, Nedward? I've never seen that. That's so funny to me.
That's my dead name. You bitch.
No, no. I should be kicked off the podcast. Oh, how are you?
I am a little sleepy, although Same. It is not the morning.
It's not, but I'm also sleepy. I was yawning for like 30 straight minutes before we hopped on this call. So that's the vibe, everybody. You do it. Ooh. You know that sometimes people yawn when they see someone else yawn, right? It's infectious. But also if you just hear or see the word yawn, you yawn. Mm-hmm. My high school psychology teacher did this thing where she wrote the word yawn on the whiteboard and then was like, and was like trying to prove that psychology to us, and so then everyone started yawning, and if you yawned you got disqualified. I'm sorry, I'm making Ned yawn.
I'm disqualified.
I wonder if how many of you are yawning, let us know. But I hated this teacher. I thought she was such a bitch, and so I was like adamant to prove her wrong. So I remember sitting there with like tears in my eyes, like forcing myself not to yawn, and then the second the bell rang I like bolted out the door and yawned in the hallway. I was like, I was like, you will not win, you will not beat me.
And she never did, and she never quit. After
yeah
that day
we're mortal enemies, so
good
to this day.
What are we, who are we, and what are we doing here?
Speaking of mortal enemies, we're Wisteria Gaze, a podcast where we talk about Desperate Housewives. My name is Mackenzie.
My name's Ned.
It is, and we are talking about season 4, episode 3, another decent, strong entry into a, so far, very strong season.
Oh, I heavily agree. I don't want to speak too soon, but I'm having a lot of fun.
I love season 4. I'm digging it so hard. It's probably my favorite since the first, honestly.
Ooh.
Also, cool. I've had a couple of people reach out to me.
Really?
Some of you might be listening, I don't know, but like friends of mine who have reached out to say they've started Desperate Housewives because of me talking about it too much.
Oh my God.
I had a friend named Bex, shout out Bex, who was like, hey, I'm going to start it. I've never watched it. And I was like, get ready, queen. And I keep getting texts about season 1 and about how it's like blowing her mind. And I'm like, yes, join us.
Everybody I talk to about Desperate Housewives thinks I'm talking about the Real Housewives. So you're doing better than I am.
I do feel like it sucks whenever I look up Desperate Housewives. I do also scoop a lot of like Real Housewives, like for gifts or for content. Whenever I'm trying to Google our girls.
Yeah.
Not the Real Housewives.
Come on. We were first.
I only want the desperate ones.
I only want my housewives to be desperate.
Is Real Housewives, like, not based on, but is it inspired by the phenomenon that was Desperate Housewives? I'm curious. The name is just so similar.
It's just rich women. Reality TV. I don't know.
I'm curious. Well, hey, let's talk about our girls. You ready to dive into this, Sodi?
I am already dead. I drowned last night.
Because you dove in too early.
Yeah. It's my mistake. Gosh. It won't happen again for multiple reasons.
You. Oh my God. I'll do some CPR and let you know that this episode premiered October 14th, 2007. It was written by John Pardee and Joey Murphy and directed by a new director to us, Bethany Rooney. No relation to Mickey, I think. She's a director and producer that has a ton of credits with shows in the 90s, like The Wonder Years, Beverly Hills 90210, Crossing Jordan, Melrose Place with our very own Marsha Cross, Wintry Hill, Ally McBeal, Gilmore Girls, etc. Seems like a cool lady. Did a lot of TV work.
Nice.
For hashtag Sondheim Watch, this episode is called The Game. And once again, like last week, we're getting very niche again. This is though, actually a song written by Sondheim, so we're back to that. But this is apparently from an oft-forgotten musical that Sondheim wrote the music and lyrics for. I've never heard of it. It's called Roadshow. And apparently it was also called Bounce. And then before that, it was called Wise Guys. And then before that, it was called Gold! Exclamation point. And it's apparently about, like, two real-life brothers during the Klondike Gold Rush of the 1920s. And it seems pretty bad. The fact that it's been renamed four times probably shows you the amount of times they've tried to make this musical work.
They just haven't had a good draft yet.
They haven't had a good draft. So apparently Stephen Sondheim wrote music for this, and The Game is a song in that musical, and that is the name of this episode. And that's all I got.
All right. Well, if that's all you got, let's go to the lane, because it is time to play, Mackenzie.
Ooh.
Children love games. They love so many different types. And the first step for a kid to play a game is convincing their friends to play those games. And the same can be said for adults as well. Our opening scene is Susan is throwing a charades party, her annual charades party.
I think that's so funny that she has this every year and no one likes it.
People do like it. The boys like it. The husbands seem to really enjoy it.
The husbands are into it. Here's the thing, charades is fun. I need everyone to stop pretending like charades isn't fucking fun, okay?
I think they just don't like playing with Susan. I don't know why.
Yeah, we didn't really get to figure out why, because like in the game scene, she was fine. I mean, we really get to see a lot of the game because of reasons we will get into. But yeah, I thought that was very funny. You know, at least this show understands that the hardest thing as an adult is making plans with other people.
That is true.
So, you know, that's representation right there. I thought this was great. Kind of a Mean Girls-esque phone tree scene.
Yeah.
Loved it, with Susan calling Gabby, Gabby, like Susan calling Lynette, but then Brie calling Lynette and looping in Gabby, and then the three of them all calling Susan again. Like, I thought that was very funny. I thought it was great.
Yes, I loved that. The reason why Brie calls Lynette, we should say, is because Brie has some hot goss. There's a lot of hot goss. There's a lot of gossip. There's a lot of drama. Like I said last episode, I'm loving it.
I'm loving it. Can I tell you, I think one of my favorite parts of the entire episode was the way Marcia Cross delivered like that line where she was like, and then when she asked about her father, oh, no, what was it? She was like, and then when Adam said, and I quote, what are we going to tell her? She said, and I quote, we're going to have to come up with better lies. Like, I loved like her face during that whole scene of her like spilling this tea was like genuinely funny to me. Like, I just, I love Brie so much. I just thought it was really funny and great.
I love that. And when they loop Gabby in, they kind of formulate this plan where, listen, if Catherine is kind of weird, we might be able to get her to go to the game night. And if she gets drunk enough, we can get her to spill her secrets.
Get them beans spilt, baby. Yeah.
And so everybody can now not only come, but they really, really hope that Catherine can make it.
Oh, and it's so funny because Susan is like, everyone wants you there. And Catherine immediately clocks it as them being like Susan is so, you know, naive. I feel like sometimes when it comes to this stuff, and Catherine immediately gets the vibe, but she still agrees to come over. Can I tell you, one of my notes was the dichotomy of Susan's tits looking that good with the crucifix in between them is putting me into a tailspin. That was insane. Susan just wearing a crucifix constantly all of a sudden. And I notice it in literally every scene. Like, when did Susan get so Catholic? I don't, like, what happened?
Ever since she got married, she's changed.
This can be cut out, but that's all that scene, really.
Yeah, and that's the opening scene, right? Because
yes,
we then go to the Scavo household, because we learn that Stella Wingfield, right?
Wingfield. I think, maybe, something. I haven't
It was Winfield or Wingfield. I think it was Wingfield, though.
Who knows?
We can never find out, so.
We'll never know. I will not Google this, no.
Nope. She has always hated to cook, but the only thing she hates more than cooking is seeing her daughter in pain. And so she goes to the kitchen and slaves over the oven to make her some mac and cheese.
Do you know what's so funny now that I'm thinking about it?
What?
She did like a bake, like a mac and cheese bake. And then when she brings a plate of mac and cheese out, it is like an ocean. It's like soupy as fuck. Like, how did you bake it? I know it's a prop issue. It's not actually like the character. But how do you bake a mac and cheese and it's that soupy?
If she's always hated cooking, maybe she just doesn't know how to cook.
She needs to get Susan's recipe. Remember when Susan made mac and cheese in the pilot?
And it was all crispy? Yes.
Oh, did we get that cookbook? I know. Or I got that one book that had the recipe in it. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Throwback. We got to go back to season one. I swear to God. Well, all that to say. Sorry, I get distracted by the mac and cheese. What's up?
Can I say something?
Please, always.
It does have to do with the episode, but I was expecting, like, the hijinks music and everything. I wrote in my notes, her daughter was sick, though, so she put a bunch of weed in this mac and cheese. I thought she spiked the mac and cheese. That is not true. But she does suggest to Lynette that, like, hey, maybe if you got high a little bit, you would feel less nauseous. You could eat a bit more.
Get a little weed.
Yeah. A what?
A wed? I thought the line, let mama score you some kick-ass chronic, was insane.
Can we get shirts?
That's like, let mama score you some kick-ass chronic. I would personally love that.
My mama got me this.
my mama got me some kick-ass chronic, and all I got was this stupid t-shirt.
My mom took me to kick-ass chronic. And all I got was this dumb t-shirt.
Oh my god. We need a Stella kick-ass chronic design.
Yeah, Stella's kick-ass chronic.
Stella's kick-ass chronic. It's recreational use only, please. That is so funny. Yeah, I mean, we can get into it later too, especially with what Lynette says about weed, but I just feel like the conversations around weed are so different now.
Yeah.
It is like it's legalized in a lot of counties, you know. I mean, you and I live in a city that, like, we could just go to a dispensary and get edibles and we're fine. And, like,
not gonna remember this recording. We're so high right
now. I'm so fucking high right now. But, like, I just think, you know, obviously people know how to, that it's not gonna kill you. Like, it's like, it's just so funny, like, being here in, like, 2007 when, like, the conversations around weed were, like, they're making it seem like it's like just as bad as like heroin or something. Like, it's just very funny to hear Lynette's like fear of weed, and I'm like, it just chills you out and you feel less like shit. And it was really common, I feel like, for cancer patients to use weed for like literally the reason Stella said. Like, I'm surprised that wasn't given as an option by the doctor to Lynette. Like, I just think
it may have been, but she may have rejected it.
Yeah, I just think it's very funny, these very 2007 conversations about weed.
And then we cut to Mike, who's building a crib. Susan walks in and says, don't you think it's a bit too early?
I hate that.
Only been about a month. And then Mike goes, oh, yeah, I got pink and blue.
Get yellow or green, King. Come on.
Come on, Mike.
I mean, I don't like how they have brought this up like five times this episode. You know what I mean? They keep bringing up, it's only the first trimester, like 50 times.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good.
I don't like that. I don't trust Desperate Housewives.
Yeah, neither do I now that you say it.
But I just also noticed it so much. Yeah, what's up?
Boy. Girl. No.
Colts
fans.
My gender is Colts fan.
Yeah.
The three genders are boy, girl, and Colts fan. I honestly thought Mike was so fucking cute in this scene.
Yeah.
I was like worried because I feel like they're really nailing that, like, it's a little too early kind of thing. And, you know, miscarriages often happen in early in trimesters if they're going to happen, and especially at Susan's age, I just am like nervous about that being a storyline. I'm like, y'all are talking about it too much. But Mike was so cute. He's like so happy and he's so giddy, and the Colts fan thing was cute. Also, it's like, you know, it's hot to see a man build something with his hands. So him building a crib is fun. I just thought this, I thought Mike was like peak cute in this scene.
He was great.
It's awesome.
Do we get anything else important?
Not really. It's just sort of like Susan's like, you know, it's a little early, it's a little early. But then she looks over across the street and she sees Bree and Orson are coming home. So she's going over to ask about the OB. And I like that, like, Orson and Bree kind of had this shorthand for, like, Susan's a hugger. Do you need me to interfere? Like, they're you know, they're finding their ways to keep people from touching Bree.
Yeah.
But this is where we set up sort of the kind of the main conflict of this episode, really, is as Susan is asking Bree for her OB because she's feeling weird about it being Adam and obviously needs a doctor during this time. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't know what I would do if I was Bree to get out of this. I thought it was, like, a little weird because, I don't know why she couldn't just recommend, like, surely Bree has a normal OBGYN that she goes to, mm-hmm. that she could recommend, but maybe her fear is that, like, Susan would mention Bree's pregnancy, and then that doctor would be like, what are you talking about? Like, maybe that's the fear there, right? Yeah, this is such an interesting conflict, because it's very cool that, like, to see Bree get kind of caught in a corner a bit and really fuck it up, really. Like, the consequences of this lie are really coming with this situation. But I also am like, I don't know what I would do if I was Bree trying to get out of this. Susan's gung-ho. She wants that number, baby.
While Bree is trying to just lie her pants off, she kind of caves a little bit and says, fine, I will give you a number. She runs inside and finds the first number in the phone book, jots it down, and hands it to Susan.
And we don't really see the consequences of that just yet.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
I'm sure it'll be all good. We cut to this weird little scene of Adam washing the car. I do think it's funny that, like, Nathan Fillion is playing this, like, fit, hot young husband, which is very funny to me. And some hot woman.
He's wearing, like, little polos.
Yes. Do you want to know what this woman said?
What'd she say?
Can I have a slurp from your hoose? Do you remember that joke? Yes. Do you remember that?
I do.
Who said that? Was that Hoops?
Yeah, that was Hoops.
Oh, fuck. I missed the Hoops. What the fuck? If there's one thing y'all can count on is that we will bring the Hoops up once yes. a season. Because I fucking miss her so much.
I want a slurp.
Would you like a slurp from my hoop? Oh, it's when that guy fucking, like, died in her front yard. Oh, my God.
Yes, who overheated. And then she dragged him to Bree's yard.
Oh my God, I miss her. Well, this woman doesn't die, but Adam does let her slurp from his hose. Mm. And he's flirting. And Catherine walks out and is like, you cheating hoe.
And he's like, I was talking to her.
He was flirting, though. Yeah. He was, like, holding the fucking hose where his dick was. I was like, okay.
No, yes, I agree.
I mean, well, this is sort of we get these little bitty sprinkles of backstory with Catherine. I think they're doing a good job at, like, not, like, throwing it at us like they did with season two. Season three got a little rushed at points. I think they're doing a really good job at lightly letting the story kind of seep out with them. And so she sort of mentions, like, with our history, you would think you would know not to do that, which is what indicated to me that he's a cheater. Yeah. So I'm assuming he's cheated on her before, just based on the way she spoke to him there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely like, you don't want to have a Chicago situation, do you?
It's always Chicago. That's the only city these people know.
It's because they're in Illinois.
Yes. You know who Gabby looks like to me in this moment?
Eva Longoria.
She does look like Eva Longoria. Gabby, has anyone ever told you you look just like Eva Longoria? That's crazy. That is such a funny joke, Ned. I'm so pissed. That's, like, funnier than what I was going to say. I was going to say Bella Goth from The Sims. I'm realizing that Gabby is just Bella Goth. And she's wearing this, like, red lingerie number. And I was like, okay, Miss Bella Goth.
I feel like we may have said this before.
Probably.
But we cut to Gabby, such funny Carla.
Joke, man. What the fuck? I'm sorry. It's like totally broken me. Okay. I'm good. Let's talk about this scene.
We go to... Are you okay?
I'm good.
Do you need a, do you need just one more, do you need a moment of silence?
No, what's going on with Gabby and Carlos? Ned, tell me about it.
So Gabby and Carlos are having a talk. What are we?
They're trying to, what is it, DTR? Define the relationship? I learned that from the show Faking It. Remember that?
I do remember that. I mean...
Faking It feels like just a fever dream we all had.
It got two seasons.
That's... I feel like it had 12.
There's a man in that show who I have a history with. A parasocial history with.
We need to have a bonus episode on Faking It. Oh my gosh. Yeah, they're trying to DTR. They're trying to be like, what's going on? And Gabby is... trying to figure out why they're still sneaking around, and clearly Carlos has not told Gabby about what's going on with Edie, with the blackmail and the engagement. I'm honestly surprised he hasn't told her about the blackmail, at least, just because that seems like I mean, I get that he's maybe trying not to make it Gabby's problem, but like, Gabby can maybe help him. I don't know how, but you know, she might be able to help him. But you know, he says, hey, give me 2 weeks.
All right. And she says, doesn't she say she can't wait 2 weeks?
That's later. Yeah, today, right here, she agrees, and I'm like, okay.
We then cut to Carlos sneaking out of the house. We pan over. I loved this transition shot.
Great transition
over to, I knew who she was going to be buying from. Who else? She, meaning
Stella.
We cut to Stella buying some
weed
from Andrew.
I love that he is the gay drug dealer of the neighborhood.
Of course he's going to be the gay drug dealer of Fairview.
He's my favorite boy on earth. I need Andrew to have more screen time. Every time he shows up this season, I light up like a Christmas tree.
I want him to have so much more to do.
Give Andrew a boyfriend challenge. What happened to Justin? I know they broke up because Andrew's being an asshole to him, but still.
I would like to nominate Stella, lesbian of the episode, purely for just buying drugs.
That's a very funny reason. I love that.
All right. She's in the bucket. I'm chucking
She's
her.
She's in the bucket. Get her in that bucky, baby.
She's as stiff as a spear.
Okay. So ding, 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 ding. Yeah. In the bucket, yeah.
We then cut to something that I keep laughing my fucking ass off at.
I knew you would. I knew you would.
Orson just got off the phone. Something is wrong with Danielle. And that is not the funny part, okay? It's very serious.
No. That's not funny.
What's going on with Danielle is very serious. The funny part is this little jerk of a teen decided she's 8.5 months pregnant. She took some roller skates, and she's just going to go fucking roller skating around the convent?
Like, okay.
What does this Xana do?
It's Danielle 8.5 months pregnant in Starlight Express. just fucking. Okay, what kind of convent is this that, like, they, because she said, she references, and I don't love this language, but she references, like, the eating disorder girls. Like, why is there a wing? Like, why is this, like, a hospital that's also a convent?
It's probably a convent where, like, rich people send their, like, troubled daughters.
That
you know?
Is insane.
Like, I don't doubt that is something that exists.
Bonkers. Bonkers bananas. Well, yeah. Danielle, I love how Danielle is like, I want to be an adult. And then this motherfucking idiot rollerblades while she's pregnant. I hate it.
She wants to watch movies, and Bree says, no, you're actually going to be locked in your room for the last month till you give birth. So fuck off. Sorry.
I loved it. That's what she said. I like that. We're so tired. We're very giggly this episode. We cut to the Scavo house. We see Tom for the first time, and he comes home and sees that Lynette has not eaten. Tom wants her to come to charades, but she's feeling a little sick. And it's a teeny tiny scene because Andrew knocks on the door, comes up with honestly a great excuse to get the weed to Stella, being like, oh, a package got delivered to our place by accident. Howdy, neighbor. And Stella grabs it. And that's all we get for right now.
Because now we have to go to the doctor's office. Yay!
I like that Fairview has like this one part of town that like is like the bad part of town. Yeah. Because that's like where they go whenever they need to show there's a bad part of town here. And it's like the vibes are always wild. You know, it always definitely is saying something about the fears of like the type of women these women are and the type of women who watch this show, right? Of like, mm-hmm. what like the inner city looks like. It's just very comically weird to me. Yes. So these jokes don't really land for me, but Susan is here and it is a not good part of town, quote unquote. And yeah, this show just loves to do that. This show like likes to do shit like that. And I just like, I don't know. It doesn't really land for me.
It doesn't land, and it doesn't even feel like it's a satire where they're blowing it up because these women have this point of view.
Yeah, just I don't get it.
Yeah.
Whenever they do stuff like this, I'm sure we'll get to it later when Susan says what was around the OBGYN. Did you catch that?
I did.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get to that, but honestly it seems like a lit part of town.
Yeah, it does.
with that bookstore alone. So
I think I put exclamation points.
Like, sorry that like you're not cool enough to go to the OBGYN that's next to the trans bookstore. Like, sorry about it.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Susan. That you are horrible.
You're not cool enough.
Yet she's listed as my favorite housewife.
Well, we cut away for now. To the kids are trying to eat the brownies.
What brownies? I thought this...
Hmm?
What brownies?
The pot brownies, baby, that Stella made. I thought this interaction was... This actress that plays Stella is so funny to me. And I loved her interaction with the kids where she was like, these are for grown-ups. And then I think Parker or one of the boys were like, is it like your grown-up iced tea? Which is obviously like iced tea she's spiked. And she's like, it's similar. Like, I thought that was a very funny line reading.
That was very good.
Yeah. I also sorry.
No, please.
No.
I also really enjoyed how she tells the kids to eat a bunch of junk food, go watch movies, but keeps Parker and says, no, you got the face for this job.
She uses him to use those puppy dog eyes, those Parker Nation eyes, yes, to convince Lynette to eat one of the brownies.
That's exactly what happens.
Yes.
Good for her. Lesbian of the episode, Lynette taking drugs.
Anyone that does drugs is automatically a the episode nominee. I love it. We love to see it. I actually have a Lote nominee coming up right now.
Ooh.
In the next scene.
Slap it on me.
Slap it on you. Bow. We cut to the Mayfair house. Catherine and Adam are heading out to the party, the charades party, while Dylan and Julie are doing homework together. And Julie's trying to get the tea. And Dylan is like, my mom freaked out. It's really weird. And then we get, I don't know if this is the first time we've gotten this, we get Detective Julie. It runs in the fucking family. She has that detective hat. Detective Julie is here.
Suits her.
And honestly, I wanted to nominate Lesbian of the Episode for Julie and Dylan this whole episode, because the way Julie like looks at her, helps her, Julie like lockpicking a door open. They're just like, they're just a little bit in love. I think they're a little bit in love.
I think they're a lot of bit in love. And I say, I did watch Kick-Ass a few days ago. And she has so much more chemistry with Julie than she did her actual love interest in that movie.
That is so hilarious. Yeah, I can see a good ship being Dylan and Julie.
Oh, yeah.
Dooley? Jillian? Jillian might be the better name. I don't know. but yeah, so I wanted to loat nominee just Dylan and Julie for this whole episode. They were giving me vibes.
Nice. Do you have any more loats?
I do not.
I'll have to see. We'll give it a little bit.
Let's give it some time. Let's let it rest.
Because for now, we have to go.
We get a tiny, tiny scene that's just like Mike is getting ready for the party and tells Brie and Orson as they come in that Susan has been unreachable since her OB appointment. And he's like, yeah, her phone is like dead. Like, she's been gone for like 6 hours. Sorry, Ned was mid-yawn and I think I choked them saying that.
Forgot about
then,
that.
Yeah, and then Orson's like, Mike mentions the street, and then Orson with Brie only is like, that's an awful part of town. Why did you send her there? And
people Brie's just got like, murdered there.
Yeah, and Brie's like, is it? So that's great. And then there's a moment where Catherine and Adam come in, and Brie's like, I want a drink. And that's it. It's kind of just they're getting ready for the party.
We then go to Edie and Carlos getting ready for the party as well. And Edie really, really wants to announce that engagement. Carlos does not. And he really, he says, please just keep it quiet tonight. Promise me. And she does. She promises that she will not say a word. And then she slips on a big ring.
I feel like, how is that not a red flag that this man's like yelling at you? It's like, no, under any circumstances, don't let anyone know. Like, he's very angry.
Yeah.
That should be like huge red flag.
She's like, that's just his way of telling me he loves me.
He really loves me, doesn't he? We get a tiny, tiny scene of Victor and Gabby walking over. We're all getting to the Susan's house. And Victor just kind of randomly mentions that, like, he had a competitor whose wife had a scandal. I honestly forgot what happened. But, you know, he just sort of makes a note that, like, Gabby would never do that to him.
And we get a little bit of game night.
We do. This is us. Why are we Orson and Tom? Yeah. This little moment was so cute with Orson and Tom. I was like, am I shipping Orson and Tom right now? Because I just thought it was so funny them like just bickering at the table while they were getting their food. And they're both so excited to play charades. And I loved Orson's like, you'll wish you never played this game line. I just thought that. I thought Orson and Tom saying. Were very cute.
I love that the boys love this little game night.
The boys, they be loving charades. And then we get the ladies as well, and the ladies are fishing for tea.
They're playing a little bit of 20 questions with Catherine, and she is a little bit of annoyed with it. Right? She picks up on it.
Yeah, Catherine is absolutely like, no.
Yeah, and I believe pretty soon after that, Edie comes in and is like, oh, my forehead is so sweaty and I can only use this specific hand to wipe it all off. Oh, there's a ring? Oh, no, that's not supposed to be there.
I loved her saying, I promised my fiance I wouldn't announce it, as if they don't know who she's dating. Like, her saying, like, my fiance, as if it's this, like, anonymous man when, like, everyone knows she's dating Carlos. Speaking of Eva Longoria, her face in that moment was so fucking funny. Like she played Gabby seeing that ring so fucking funny. Like, that was just a great moment from her. And she obviously goes and, like, hunts down Carlos immediately.
And Susan kind of hunts down Brie because Susan's home.
She's finally home. She's a mess.
And she's like, talk now. But
bada
we
bing,
get
bada boom.
But we get Carlos and Gabby first, I believe.
We do. This scene was insane to me because they're screaming, like, yelling.
I heard that.
Like, people are literally, like, 20 feet inside the door. And Carlos is fully yelling. I just think that was what really got me. I realized my other note was about Edie, because I do love immediately after this when Carlos goes to yell at Edie, she goes, "It's been 3 days, Carlos. How long was I supposed to wait?" I thought that was a funny line. But yeah, no, like basically this season is just like Gabby breaking up with Carlos. She's over it. Yeah. She's like, "No, if you're going to be proposing to her, I'm not going to fucking be with you anymore."
And then we get our Susan and Bree scene. Susan's mad. What the heck is going on?
I mean, she's being really judgmental, but also I think rightfully angry that like she was expecting something different. The line, the ant traps on the speculum tray sent shivers down my spine. The idea of there being ants on a speculum.
Well, how else are they going to get their degrees if they can't fucking study with the doctor, Mackenzie?
The ants?
Yes.
The little ant gynecologists.
Yes.
The ant's the best gynecologist because it can get in places regular people can't.
Have you ever seen The Boys?
I have not, no.
Never mind. But I'm going to leave that in. So if you have seen The Boys, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, shit. I associate ants with a very weird David Lynch a short film where it's a... He drew it, and it's a bunch of ants singing to a man, "When I look at you, I see an asshole." And it's very funny.
That's funny.
All my Lynch heads out there. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of crossover with David Lynch and Desperate Housewives. I am one of them. Her tire was slashed and her cell phone was stolen. That is what sent me to the stratosphere laughing. Like, Susan had the literal worst day of her life.
Loat nominee, so we can make her day a little bit better.
Susan's bad day. Susan and the not good, not so very bad day, or whatever the hell. The
horrible, not so good, very bad day.
Yes.
I think we both blacked out because that scene just kind of ends.
I don't remember how it ends, no.
But we do go to Gabby angrily coming out of the bathroom, because this is where she calls it off, right?
She called it off just before, yeah. Yes,
she called it off just before.
Carlos calls the dude and is like, "You gotta secure VD." And then Gabby goes off to be Gabby in this scene.
She starts flirting with Adam.
Her husband and his wife are literally at this party. What is the end goal here?
Yeah, and Victor literally everybody is watching this happen. And then Edie goes, "Oh, Catherine, do you want to know something really interesting?"
I just thought this was... What was the goal here, Gabby? Like, your husband is there. His wife is there. Like, what the fuck is... What? I will say I do love that the setup for this like episode kind of is like everyone at this party with their various like fights and intricacies. I thought that was actually a really fun setup. I love shit like that where it's like all kind of in one setting and everyone sort of dealing with their own minute things. I like stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. And then from here, we end that scene with Edie kind of dishing out some gossip to Catherine. We go to Lynette having the time of her life watching SpongeBob SquarePants.
Which I need. She's so me.
We've all been there.
We've all been there. I love it.
I'm so happy. She was having fun. She's eating snacks.
I love her being like, "This is genius." Like, she's never seen SpongeBob before. I love it.
And that's truly that whole scene. Because we immediately go back to the party where we are picking teams. I loved the line of Mike trying to get Susan to pick him, and she goes, "Honey, I love you, but I want to win." We're picking teams.
We pick some teams. Orson has this weird part where he's like, "Hey, Gabby, Edie just tried to kill herself. Maybe don't pick her last." And Gabby's like, "You're right." And then picks Edie last, like lets Edie get picked last. Thought that was funny.
Yeah.
But we quickly cut away because Julie is using a lockpick, like an icon?
Detective, thief, daughter, triple threat.
Triple threat. This is where I actually wrote lesbian the episode for the way Julie looks at Dylan while they break the law. And then I wrote the new Thelma and Louise. The two of them. I need the two of them to get in the convertible immediately and just drive away together. But I think that's literally all we get from that scene is just them breaking into this attic room.
That is because we go back to the party and Lynette's here.
Have you ever acted like this high? Have you ever felt like this while you were high?
I don't think so. Like, I've been a little hyper, maybe a little talkative, but I'm not, like, doing flips across the room, you know? Like, what about you? Like, you?
No, I feel like it makes me tired. Like, getting high makes me, like, more chill. Mm-hmm. And, like, I just want to sit and, like, hang out. It's definitely not made me want to do karate. And I even to all of you naysayers, like, well, it's her first time. Like, I think even the first time I got high, I was more so, like, experiencing it. So I, like, didn't want to move. I was like, oh, I'm so scared. What's going on?
I was really giggly. And
yeah, it's giggly.
I really wanted to eat pineapple, but that was about
interesting.
It.
Yeah, I just feel like. Like, Felicity Huffman is, like, playing like she just, like, snorted a line of coke in the bathroom and then came out and is, like, kicking shit off tables. So I just think it's a very interesting acting choice, which poses the question, has Felicity Huffman ever smoked weed? Because I don't think she has.
I think it's so interesting when I feel like we've talked about actors playing drunk before. It's similar to actors who also have to play high. Like, it's just such a weird thing because a lot of the time you just look at the performance and it's not realistic. So how can we as actors fix this?
I had an acting teacher once. I thought it gave actually really great advice for playing drunk. And he was sort of just like made us popcorn. Like, what do we think of when we think of playing drunk, quote unquote? And so it's like, you know, wobbly head, slurred words. What like we like listed out these things that we think of when someone's drunk. And then he said, OK, only play one of them. Mm-hmm. He's like, because when people play drunk, they're trying to play everything. They're trying to be like, oh, I'm flopping around, I'm slurred, da da da. And usually, like, if you're playing an adult who can handle their liquor in some way, they know how to hide some aspects but let the other one sneak out. And so his advice for, like, playing drunk or playing high was only play one aspect of the five that come to your mind. Like, don't feel like you have to play everything. Because then it comes off as really fake. And I've always thought of that. As an actor, there's free college for you guys. Free acting college. There you go.
You're welcome.
But yeah, Felicity Huffman's playing like 15 different types of intoxications, I feel like, all at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
Can I also say, if I was ever a part of a charades game that had the word two mules for Sister Sarah, a oft-forgotten Shirley MacLaine film in it, I would lose my mind. That was the answer.
I have no idea what that is.
I had to Google it, and I was like, Shirley MacLaine was in a movie called Two Mules for Sister Sarah, and that is in this... What?
I did love how Brie was, like, the only one who knew what the fuck Orson was trying to say.
I think that's so funny. Let me see. It is a 1970 American-Mexican-Western film filmed in Panavision starring Shirley MacLaine and... Clint Eastwood. Okay, maybe it was a big deal when it came out. Apparently they were trying to sort of play on the, you know, success of Dirty Harry. It was mostly a direct-to-DVD film. Or VHS, I should say.
All right.
I would say in the scope of Shirley MacLaine and Clint Eastwood films, this is not a big one. So I find it very funny that that was... the charades clue.
And then we go to Lynette's turn.
Jesus. This was
distasteful.
Bad. Distasteful secondhand embarrassment was through the fucking roof.
She is high and she mimes hanging herself and points to Edie a bunch.
I'm not laughing at that. I'm laughing
I'm
at
not
the,
either.
Like what? Like I I'm so uncomfortable. I have to laugh when I realized what was happening. I was like, because I did not remember this, and I was like, oh my god, oh my god.
Can I
when
say
I was
though,
so high? She's making a suicide joke. Yes, let me know.
Very end of the scene, after everything that happens, Lynette does come in with a button that I think is kind of funny.
It was very funny. it was very funny. Because a lot of shit happens before the button, yes. though.
No, a lot of shit happens. First of all, there is also a phone call for Orson. Andrew comes down and tells him that. So he goes and takes that call. Stella is here to not only collect Lynette, but the brownies that she brought as well. Unfortunately for all of us at home, she does collect the brownies before anybody can eat them.
Damn, we need an episode where everybody gets high, though.
That'd be so awesome. And then they're at the charades party. Like that.
We need more, you know, we were just talking about the high as drunk people not playing it well, but we do need more. I love when they play drunk, because remember the margaritas on the porch? That was such a good scene. Like, we need more. And then Susan, it was when Susan gets in the taxi and she's shit-faced, and it was Ida's taxi. Oh, memories. Well, yeah, so the weed brownies get intercepted, so... And while, like, Tom is collecting them, he, like, runs into Gabby, who then spills her drink on Adam. And then Catherine picks a fight in front of everybody. And the when she says something like, so you're going to breastfeed him? I fell out of my chair.
Victor finds out about John Tucker because I don't believe that he knew.
No, because obviously Edie said that to Catherine earlier. So then, like... I forget who does what first, because Gabby throws the you slap your kid thing in front of everybody. And then Bree's like, oh, my God, why'd you say that? And yeah, Catherine throws John Tucker at Gabby. But then Catherine, I think, ultimately ends up winning this battle.
Because she heavily insinuates, and we find out that she did this on purpose because of the phrasing, but she basically insinuates that her father did the worst thing. Her husband could do the worst thing a man could do to his child.
To Dylan. Sorry. And that's why she refuses to, like, talk about her ex.
So, what you're telling me is Dylan's not his child.
Where are you getting that from?
I said father, and you corrected me, and I said child, and you corrected me.
Well, because you said Catherine said her dad, which would insinuate, like, Dylan's granddad.
Sorry, that is not what I meant.
I wasn't attempting to correct you into a spoiler. I was trying to correct, like, it's Dylan's dad, not Catherine's dad.
I meant Dylan's dad. Sorry, I'll re-say that. What was I saying? What did I mean to say?
I don't know. That was genuinely not me trying to be that was not me trying. I was just me being pedantic about the wording. I apologize.
No, you're good.
You're basically explaining what Catherine said to her.
I can't. We have to move on.
Do you want me to do it?
Catherine definitely wins this battle, this argument, because we find out, she heavily insinuates, and she does this on purpose, we find that out later, that her ex-husband did the worst thing a man could do to his child. And everybody kind of goes silent. Ooh.
I mean, art just happened. They're like, wow, there's so much on this lane.
Hang 'em High has three syllables.
That was a very funny. What even is Hang 'em High? What are these charades clues?
They're old, Mackenzie. Hang 'em High. Old people.
Okay, I'm so sorry. Hang 'em High is a 1968 Clint Eastwood movie. Is this Clint Eastwood charades?
It might be a little Easter. Somebody in the writer's room might really like Clint Eastwood.
They're like, I love revisionist Western films starring Clint Eastwood. Another great Eva Longoria face acting moment. She's like really great at just giving us like great moments just with her face. So just shout out. Also, did Gabby cut her hair? I noticed like in this scene her hair looked shorter and I was like, what?
Looked good.
I only now noticed. So that's good for me.
We then get a short scene of Victor trying to figure out how to spin this in the press. And he says to Gabby, well, he was underage, right? So a couple million? Shut him up?
It's also a problem that's like not even around anymore. It's like very weird that it would come up, but I guess he's
scared.
He's a politician, yeah. And we get this small scene where Julie and Dylan are going through some boxes. And Julie is like, surely you remember this bear. Like, Julie seems to remember more about Dylan's life than Dylan does. And she's like, yeah, I mean, this is your old room. And then Dylan's like, wait, my mom said I'm in my old room down the hall. And before we can, like, unpack that, Catherine walks in on them and sends Julie away. And she tells Dylan she doesn't want her seeing Julie anymore.
Ooh.
Star-crossed lovers.
Lote, right here. We're naming it.
Lote. Julie and Dylan.
Julie and Dylan.
Star-crossed Lote. Lovers.
We then cut to Orson going to Bree, giving her the information about what is up with Danielle. And
yeah,
she may lose the baby. They don't know.
Yeah, it was like a placental abruption or something. Mm-hmm. So the baby kind of got popped out of the placenta, basically, the sac that's supposed to protect the baby. Marcia Cross, her and Dana Delaney, from this moment on to the end of the episode, acting their fucking faces off, I just want to say. Mm-hmm. Marcia Cross always impresses, but she's really, really good. And I love this moment of her racing out. She's like, I just want to be with my daughter. Susan tries to stop her, and I loved Bree being like, not everything is about you, and then leaving, because it's like, Susan maybe needs to hear that. I mean, yeah. Bree should apologize to her, for sure, but like, I did love this moment that was like, not everything's about you, Susan, please shut the fuck up.
Oh, yeah. And then we go to Gabby and Carlos in the bathroom once again.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she is not taking any of Victor's shit anymore. She's going to see him on Thursday because when she heard about, or when she saw him flirting with Adam, he broke a glass. And when Victor heard about John, he started campaigning.
This is very season one, Gabby, of like, when Carlos kills a man, it's because he loves me. And I don't like it, but like, whatever. Victor's also annoying. I feel like there's no winning in this scenario. I was sort of liking Carlos and Gabby, but I do hate that, like, him breaking glassware out of anger is like sexy to her.
He can't help that he's such an explosion of a man.
He's such an explosion. A love explosion.
Oh, give me your love explosion.
And we see that Carlos gets a call from that guy. He's crunching some numbers, and he said he found a way to make this happen. And we linger in there for a moment, yeah, and we see that the guy is a CPA. So is he trying to, like, find if Edie has hidden money? Like, so, what's going on?
At first thought, I was like, he's either trying to send Edie to jail for something with accounting, or he's trying to move the money around.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
I had that thought before we started recording. It makes sense for him to move the money to accounts that she does not know about.
What if he just gets rid of all of it? Yeah. Like, what if he just, like, donates it, and then it's like, he's sort of like, Gabby, I gave up all my money because I just want you. Like, what if that's the kind of shit he pulls?
And then Gabby goes,
you're not rich anymore?
Ooh. Victor.
Literally. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I didn't even think about him, like, getting rid of it. That actually makes more sense, probably, than him trying to catch Edie, because I don't know what Edie would have hidden, but who knows.
And it makes more sense than killing her as well.
it does, yes.
And we find out that's not Carlos's thing. That's more of Victor's thing. Victor's not above killing.
He is not. If you have enough money, it's easy to make someone disappear. And if Gabby ever fucked another guy on my watch, that guy would be dead. Carlos just sitting there and listening to that.
I have plans Thursday. We cut to Bree feverishly packing. She really needs to get the DVD player because that's one thing that Danielle really wanted this whole time. Even in past episodes, she kept asking for DVDs and how bored she's been. And Orson says, hey, we have to go and be there for her. And Bree says, not until I give her the one thing she's been asking for.
Because that's very sad.
Although she doesn't have a great relationship with her kids, she does love them. She does want to try to bring... She realizes, I think, in this moment that, like, I need to just care for my kid.
Yeah. I mean, there's, like, a difference between, like, punishing Danielle, and then she's also just been ignoring Danielle. You know what I mean? And, like, I think she's so focused on this new baby being her second chance, she's forgotten that Danielle still needs a mom. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, just because, like, you're getting your second chance doesn't mean that Danielle also doesn't need a mom still. And I hope that this is a good moment for her. And we do get a call from the doctor and find out that Danielle's okay. The baby's okay.
Which means...
And this is when I wrote, like, Marcia Cross acting fucking circles around everyone on this show. On Earth, let's say. Crying in Orson's arms in this scene. Just really, really beautiful performance and really, really sad. Very sweet.
Can I ask you a question?
Ask away.
Do you think they still went to go be with Danielle, or do you think they were like, oh, she's fine?
I hope they went to go be with Danielle. Well, we see later that Bree's sitting on the porch, so maybe they're going to go in the morning.
We can wait. It's not as urgent.
We can wait. Now that the baby's not dying, we can wait.
I just think that's kind of funny. And from here, we go to Lynette arguing with her mother about the pot. She's mad that she gave it to her, which is understandable. You should not drug people.
Yes.
We find out the reason Lynette is really against self-medicating and weed in general is because she felt like a lot of her childhood, her mother can't remember because she was just stoned or drunk throughout the entire thing.
Yes, which I found it one funny that she was already sober, because at least for me, when I get high, it like takes me to bed. Like I don't sober. Like I want to say I went to bed high last night. I woke up at like 3 a.m. I was still high. So like it does not go away that easily for me, but okay. But it, like, this makes sense to me. Like I can see that, especially the show is trying to really hammer home that Lynette has this trauma around her mom and her childhood. But this is like so complicated, because I do think Stella is right that like she did feel good. She was eating. She was happier, and she should not be drugged. Yes. But if she can control the intake, even just a little bit, not where she's like loopy and high, but enough to make herself a little bit hungrier so that she can actually keep food down. Like there's ways to figure out dosages that aren't going to like get her bloated. But
she
like, well, like,
I don't think.
Yeah. Well, and I just, a lot. Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, please.
And I don't. I think there's a lot of people just don't have information.
Yeah.
About it, so they just think it's like it gets you that messed up every time. And it's like, if you're taking, like, you don't know how much you're taking, you're just popping a couple edibles, like, yeah, like, you're not going to be able to control, you're not going to be as under control as you can be, as you are able to be.
Yeah. And I just feel like, you know, it'd be nice if she had information or ways to, I don't know, like there's ways to be happier and healthier, but it seems like Lynette's going to shut this down and it's not going to be brought up again. And, I don't know. That's kind of it. I'm very curious where they're going to go with the Stella Lynette stuff, because like it does seem like Lynette has all this anger from her childhood that is right. Like I think very earned. Like I think she's totally right to feel this anger towards her mom, but like Stella's sort of just forcing her presence there. Like I'm just curious what the end goal is going to end up being with Stella and Lynette. I'm very interested to see where it goes.
Okay. Close your eyes.
Okay.
Lynette wakes up from her big surgery.
Okay.
And she goes, Tom, where's mom? And Tom goes, who do you think gave you the heart?
Why does she need a heart when she has lymph nodes? Or like, not lymphs.
To save her daughter's life. Mackenzie.
I just said the wrong thing. I said lymph nodes. Isn't that like the pitch perfect thing?
I think there are. I think they're still nodes.
Isn't it like lymph nodes in her? Okay, yeah. I was like, that's what I thought, but then I immediately thought of the pitch perfect girl going, I have nodes.
I have nodes. Now we know why it was so serious.
Oh my god. why would she need a heart transplant?
I don't have to explain my anything to you.
You know, you're correct. You never have to explain yourself. Not to me, King. So interested to see where that goes. But right now we're going to Bree is outside. Susan walks up to her, brings some cake, and wants to call a truce. And Bree apologizes. And Susan, I think, is actually being a really great communicator here. She's just like, I can tell something's wrong with you. And I miss you and you're distant. And I just want to know what's happening. And I thought this was a really, really great scene. And Bree obviously is still hiding the fact of the baby, but she does open up that like the baby was in danger and then that's been causing her stress. And I thought that Susan was like being really, really great and supportive here as much as she can be, right, with the information she has. And I thought this was a cute scene. I like that they kind of talk about the fact that they are older mothers. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like they haven't really acknowledged the fact that these are women in their 40s having babies, which is more dangerous for the baby. And I mean, Bree isn't, but you know what I mean. I loved the phrase pregnant gals eating cake and bitching.
Yeah.
Thought that was funny. I just thought this was a really cute scene.
It was very cute. I know we already named the loat, but chuck a
load
there. Oh,
yeah. Good load. Good load.
I did have a prediction.
Give it to me.
If the "we're only in the first trimester" lines are misleading, if there is not a miscarriage or something along those lines, Susan and Bree have kids that are the same age. Those kids grow up, they fall in love. Bree and Susan are sisters.
Well, it would make
not sisters, but
Danielle and Susan mother-in-laws, yeah. Because Danielle's technically the baby's mom. Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Wild. That would be so fucking wild.
If their kids got married. All right. We then go to Adam and Catherine talking about the misleading conversation, not conversation, but the misleading choice of words she used. And she admits she did it on purpose because, she wants to make things a bit less intriguing around here. And a comfortable a question, an answer like that makes people too uncomfortable to ask questions. Also, who's moving in with them? Her mom?
Her aunt. Her aunt. We met the aunt. She owns that house, right? Oh. She also owns the house. Because I think this is Mike's old house, right?
I think so.
I think this is the Sims house. It's so weird when everyone moves in and out of shit. It's hard to keep track of it. But I believe that this... So Lillian Sims, we met her last season because remember Edie went over to shit talk Carlos to her?
Yes.
For the lease. So that is Catherine's aunt. So that woman is related to Catherine. And she owns this house and she's like...
You think it's going to be the same actor?
I genuinely think it is, actually, if my memory serves me correct. But I don't know. Don't quote me on it. I'm assuming we're going to meet her next episode. But, yeah, so that's Catherine's aunt. She owns this house. So she's going to be living in this room as she... Also, they're sort of doing that thing with, like, with Orson, how he kind of... They hinted at him at the end of season 2, and then he kind of changed a lot coming to season 3. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, Lillian was at a... nursing home at the end of season 3, and now Catherine is like, she's ready to come home from the hospital, and like she was in a nursing home. Like, what do you I don't know. Or maybe
it's
something
the same
happened
thing, Mackenzie.
I mean, maybe something happened at the nursing home, yeah. And now they're like, maybe she needs assisted living, and maybe she's in hospice. Like, maybe we'll get more information about this, but I do think it's very funny how the show like just doesn't even like look back at what they've already written to write more stuff. And then we get the final Mary Alice monologue.
Kids love games.
Kids love games. And as we grow up, we find new games to play. And we see they pretend to be well with Lynette. They lie to their lovers with Carlos. They invent stories with Bree. And everyone has fun playing games until somebody gets hurt. And you're making a face because we get this final moment. Dana Delaney, hashtag acting queen. She's in the... Catherine is in the attic room. She pulls back the rug, sees a deep, like, jagged mark on the ground, and, like, just starts weeping into the floorboards. And, You know I'm in love with Dana Delaney. Queen.
This has to be a different kid.
What makes you think that?
I don't know. She won't let her in this room? I don't know. I just like, it's so, I'm so confused. I don't like not knowing what's going on. I have all these powers and yet I cannot see what is right in front of me.
You gotta wait for the mystery to unfurl. What caused that gash? What did the father do? That's the worst thing in the world. All this and more next time on Desperate Housewives. Because that's the end of the episode. This is a fun... I love season four.
I do
too. I love season four.
I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Having a blast. We have been Wisteria Gays. If you want to find us on social media, you can find us on Instagram at WisteriaGaze_ or on Twitter at WisteriaGaze, and also our website, Wisteria.gay.
And on Wisteria.gay, you can find links to our merch page, get a nice and juicy Abstinence Club shirt, and...
Maybe we'll have a Chronic shirt.
Yeah, Stella's Chronic shirt. I'll buy one of those.
Hell yeah.
You can also find links to our Discord. Our Discord is amazing. People keep popping in.
Yeah, hi, everybody.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's using our spoiler series discussion because I'm not allowed in there. But we have one of those. We have stuff so you can... We have channels so that you can discuss the current episodes as well as our show.
Yeah, I know. I feel like it's probably bad because that is our most active channel and that's the one you're not allowed in. So I'm the one that's in there hanging out in the spoilery series discussion the most.
Are you in there right now?
I'm in there right now. He can see me, can't he?
Go check.
I will.
See if there's anything new.
Honestly, the last video was, and I'll send it to you. I'll scrub it for spoilers, but it's a very funny compilation of Mary Alice going, "Yes," which I think you've seen.
I've seen that.
Yeah, so that's actually the last thing in that channel. So yeah, if you just like want to talk to other people about Desperate Housewives and also say hi to us on a more personal level, we're in there.
Yeah, and on our website, you can also find a link to our Patreon. Our Patreon is great. It helps support us and the show. And you get a couple cool things with the Patreon. We got to catch up on our episode notes.
Movies.
Yes, and movies.
Yeah, we got to watch some movies.
We got a couple things we got to catch up on, but we'll be posting them very soon.
Hell yeah.
With our Patreon, it is $2 minimum. Pay what you can. You basically get episode show notes and ad-free episodes as well. You get movie watches and... you get episode shout outs. So we're going to take the next minute to shout out our patrons. Thank you, Amanda.
Annie.
Aubrey.
Kaylin.
Cheryl.
Elise.
Erin.
Helena.
Jade.
Lisa.
Liv.
Lydia.
Mac.
Miki.
Nadia.
Sarah Schroeder.
Sarah Swihart.
Shane.
Susan.
Tom.
Victoria.
And Vincent.
Thank you so much for being our freaking patrons.
We love you, baby.
Yes.
Yes.
You know what I love, Mackenzie?
Tell me what you love.
I love reviews. Reviews are great. They make our day and they help other people find the show. At the end of every episode, we like posing a question to all of you to help get those review juices flowing. And I think the question this week should be...
what's your favorite niche Clint Eastwood film?
Yours?
I don't know. I've seen zero Clint Eastwood film. I watched... he directed that shitty Jersey Boys fucking movie that I watched. I don't think he's in it, though. What dish are you bringing to charades night at Susan's?
I am bringing lava cakes.
Oh shit.
Laced with PCP.
Oh my god. Have you ever seen the movie Climax?
I guess.
Because that's what you're going to do.
Yeah.
it just becomes climax.
Yes.
That movie gave me the most severe anxiety I've ever had in my fucking life while watching a movie.
Get ready for a one-shot Desperate Housewives episode where they all take PCP because I give it to them.
Oh god, I was about to spoiler a part of that movie. I'm not going to. It's too dark. It's like Julie in the closet.
No, I'm cutting that.
Okay, please. God, that movie is horrifying. It's cool visually. It's cool. It's a horrifying movie. That'd be very funny if they did it with Desperate Housewives characters. I am going to bring a bunch of water for everyone so that I can bring everyone down from their highs.
I'm just bringing blankets.
I'm bringing like jugs of water, and I'm just like, everyone drink a whole jug, go puke in the backyard. I'm the one coming to get everyone sober after PCP lava cakes.
And with that, you know, so, if you want to find us on the internet, please feel free to
hunt us down.
Mackenzie.
Yeah.
I love you.
Oh, I love you too.
Everyone else out there, stay juicy.
Stay juicy.